Agenda item number 15, pertaining to oysters. Dr. West.
Afternoon. This is not going to be a quick one. You need a break?
I don't either.
It's not going to be a quick one? You all want a break? Do you need a break? Okay.
All right.
Let's proceed.
We're requesting public hearings on
it is.
Regulation 720, and just want to give you kind of the background. And you know, we've been struggling with this effort control issue for several years now, and seem to have made some progress all of a sudden. So, kind of give you the background on that, and see how we got to where we are. This just shows the harvest for this year. And don't look at the red one, that's private, that's still not very complete. But the public one is pretty accurate. I mean, we've dropped a little bit on harvest as we thought we would. If you recall, the gears that we're worrying about and that we have the most effort with are the hand scrape and the dredge, which are just little brother and big brother of the same kind of harvesting apparatus. We've had, as the harvest has gone up, we've had this increase in the amount of people in the industry, and since 2013, when we introduced a user fee, we've been able to track those better. So we're only showing 13 through 15, but we're up to 991 user fees this past year, which is a very high number. And then you look within the user fees at what the gear they're using, and you can see that in 2015, 908 of the 991 had hand scrape licenses, and 377 had dredge licenses. And we're also seeing an increase in the patentong license, because as some of the areas weren't so good for some of the things in the later part of the seasons, they switched to a pretty big group of people switched to the patentong that hadn't been doing that before as an option for them to catch oysters. What we saw as you break down the areas last year, the James River and the Rappahannock held up pretty well, pretty similar harvest, very low harvest in Mobjack compared to the York year before. And Great Wicomico was down a little bit. But the biggest one that you see is that the dredging in Pocomoke-Tangier was 73,000 in 2014, and it was only 15,000 last year. And if you recall, we added a season in those upper areas of Pocomoke Sound last year that, you know, it was not staff's recommendation to do that, but had we not added that to the hand scrape season, the hand scraping would have been about 80%. It ended up being 91% of what it was the year before, but with the season that we added in, if you took that out, it would only be about 80%, but the dredging went down to only 20% of what it had been before. So it was we got some serious issues in Tangier and Pocomoke that we're going to have to work through for several years because of the low spat sets. As you get this growth of gear, the people in the gears with the gears, you can see that only 6% of our harvest came from dredging last year, but had 377 people that could be splitting the pie. And the same thing, 64% of the harvest was with hand scrapes and 908 to split the pie. So it's the amount available to each harvester gets smaller and smaller as the number of harvesters increases. These are the areas that will be open next year or this year coming up. The James is open. The York will be will be opening again, and it'll be less than it had been 2 years ago because of the spats that we've seen in 13 and 14. The Rappahannock areas are still pretty good. They'll be about what they had been when they reopen, and the Great Wicomico will probably be closer to what it was, maybe a little bit less. But Tangier is still in decline. So our guess for next year is that it'll be about 138,000 harvested. I mean, which is significantly less than it was this year and way less than it was in 14-15. and will be about the same amount in the dredge harvest. So just wanted to talk about the issues a little bit and understand when you hear in public hearing things that the watermen are saying, and thought I could do it with some pictures. This is if you take a shot diving on what an oyster bed looks like on the bottom. I mean, these are the oysters sitting up here. And obviously they're dug into the bottom. They attach on a shell, and as they grow, you know, sediment comes up around them, and they're pretty tightly in the bottom. Same thing here shows them. All these, you see the bills open, that's when they're feeding, but those are oysters that are in the bottom. And when we use these gear types, you can see, you know, you get the teeth, and you actually have to dig them out of the bottom. The hand scrapes are fairly heavy, got the weight on them, and they dig them out, and it cleans them. And so, you know, this is, you'll often hear the watermen talking about that they're working the bottom. But if you look at that picture, I mean, that would be similar. They are working the bottom, but it would be similar to going through a soybean field with a plow, you know, and harvesting them and thinking that the soybeans will continue to grow. And it is working the bottom, but it's just the nature of this gear type, that the density of oysters that we work with, this is the only thing that we can catch them efficiently with. And it is in no way good for the bottom to work with it, but we have to manage it as best we can with the length of the seasons, the number of people, amount of time they have to work, and our limits and everything else that we do. And we tried to do a lot of work this winter on looking at these issues to show what the impacts were on the oyster bars. And if you remember last fall when we went out in the dredge survey, which is a qualitative survey that we did, we found that there was a really big spat set in Mobjack. When more than 200 spat per bushel on this area called Toadsteak, and we had over 1,200 spat per bushel, which is the highest we'd ever seen in that area. And so we asked the commission that since there wasn't really very many market oysters there, that maybe we should leave this area alone and just harvest from the one area, where, again, that was still a pretty low amount of market oysters, but it was at least having something in this area. We went back to this area after the harvest. We went before and after. And this is the area that we harvested, and we switched. This is switching from a dredge survey, which is just pulling a dredge on. It's a qualitative survey. This is a quantitative survey. We actually can tell you how many oysters they are per meter. And you can see that before the season, they were like 150 spat per meter. And we, in the process of harvesting 610 bushels, we only had, after the season left, about 10 spat per meter. So it's not a gear that is working the bottom for productivity. It's just the nature of how it harvests. In contrast to that, this is the area that we left closed by the commission, and we went back in the spring. We actually had more spat per meter than we had when we looked in the fall, because the spat were so little when we were there in the fall that by the time we looked in April, they had grown enough that there were actually more. So, you know, there wasn't anything natural that was causing these numbers of spat to go down. It was the harvest itself that was doing that. And if you look at just look at the difference between red and blue. Red is before harvest and blue is after. And so you can look through all the sizes of orchards, from little teeny ones all the way up to big ones, and there were more there when it started than was at the end. And this is just looking at the spat. Where on the area that we didn't harvest, every one was higher after, you know, in the spring than it had been in the fall. So harvest definitely impacts them. We went ahead and we checked four of the areas, some area in each of the areas we harvested, just to see how this compared. This is Great Wicomico. This is pre-harvest. Again, the targeted group of oysters are these market oysters here. And after harvest, in order to take the market oysters from 12 oysters per meter down to about 8, you got rid of 80% of the spat, which is your next year's crop. And take some of the, and the small ones go down too. Again, it's just showing red versus blue. All sizes were impacted by harvest. It made a difference what it was. This is in Tangier, where you switch gear to the dredge instead of a hand scrape. Same thing. This is the targeted amount was about 3 oysters per meter at the beginning of the season. Got a few of them, but in the process of getting those few, we went from 40 spat per meter to down to less than 10. So, and again, this is the same story. This is Temple Bay in the Rappahannock, where the sanctuary they just were talking about in that violation was this sanctuary right here. We did the survey before they actually got on this sanctuary, but it was after the harvest had been going. We couldn't get a real good reading on the harvest area till in the spring, but you can see that, assuming that the harvest area was similar to the sanctuary, which they usually are when they're side by side, that the harvest itself, you know, got more than 90% of the spat. And into James, just looking at the spat alone and the big area that we hand scraped there before the harvest, 100 spat per meter, and 58 after harvest, and same thing there. And then when you look at the further, when we do our surveys, we also look at shell. And so when the watermen say that we're bringing up shell when we harvest, so the more that we harvest, we won't hurt anything because we're actually putting shell up. Well, the fact, before harvest and after harvest, and Mob Jack, Great Wicomico, Tangier, all of them, there were less shell there when they left than when they started. So the whole thought process, even though it's so ingrained in the waterman culture that working these bottoms is good for them, is there's no empirical evidence that that's true. And in fact, that's why we have to regulate these things so closely, is that we depend on our shell, we depend on our spat set for the future. And the reason that we have these rotations and we have the limits and all that stuff is to try to make sure that we are protecting a certain percentage of the spat every year that we can get on out to a harvestable side and not be damaged by the harvesting practice itself. And that's one of the reasons that the rotations work so well, is that you give 34 months basically for the oysters to be left alone to be able to harvest for 2 months. And so if you minimize the harvesting damage. But the more people we put on these bars, the more we do the damage, even in that short period of time. And where that brings us to is that this shows the funding that we have for over the years for doing restoration, which just about all of our money that we get from the general fund goes to putting shell out. And what we've seen over the past, it's about 2012, is this escalation in the price of shell. Even though, I mean, we're at our highest level of general funding that we've ever had, but what ends up happening is that because the price keeps going up with the same level of funding, the amount of areas that we can do restoration on them and put shell back on them after harvest is going down every year. So it's one of the reasons that we have to control effort, because if we destroy our shell, I mean, there's nothing out there for the babies attached to, except for the shell that we put there. Another big part of it is that if you look at this aqua, I mean, it used to be when the price of shells was low that we got between 20 and 100 acres every year of new restoration, now new beds producing to expand the harvest area. But now, since the price of shells has gotten so high, all of our money has to go to just maintenance, because as an example, this year we have about 1,400 acres that are below our threshold where we think we'll get any kind of reasonable spat set, and we've only got enough money to put shells back on about 500 acres. So we're we have to control harvests in order to keep something out there for the watermen to continue to harvest down the road. So this is where we were back, last year and the year forward. We were trying to figure out how to reduce this effort. And the daily catch limit, we're down to 8 bushels per man per day, which all the watermen have agreed, and SMAC and everything, is we can't go any lower. That means you just can't make a living if you get any lower than that. We can't shorten our season lengths much more than we are right now. The harvest day probably will have minimal effects because most people get in early, even if you lengthen the day. But we could do quotas, but it would be very cumbersome for staff to manage quotas on individuals or areas. And we could change gear, which means that we go away from this hand scraping and dredge altogether, and we go back to the gears that we were using before, which really just cannot make a day's work on what we have to work with right now. We are limited. In order to keep a healthy fishery, or as healthy as we can keep it economically, we've got to use this gear type that's very efficient. So what we have to choose from is to reduce the number of licenses. And if you recall last year, we worked a long time with SMAC, and even though I'll talk about the control date in a little bit, we have a control date. There was this concern that, that if you were working hard, you didn't want to take them out of the fishery. So they wanted to try to figure out how we get the part-timers out. How could we get the ones that this kind of work does not mean too much to them. So we looked at the hand scrape and the dredge separately, and we looked at the number of days that they did, and we found this big quantity that had hand scrape licenses and didn't ever use them, another big group that had less than 20 days, and we actually came to the commission for the hand scrapes that, if we could take 52% of the fishery out that had hand scrapes, only impact 9% of the harvest, and then the rest would stay in, and that was the recommendation that went forward. We did the same thing with the dredges. I had a big group that didn't buy it, they were as well didn't buy, or had no harvest. Another big group that didn't work for many days, and we recommended removing them and keeping the 206 that were counted for 90% of the harvest. And we went through the public hearing. SMAC was opposed to it, but commission passed it. And then because of the concerns about all the people, once they found out who was in and who was out, and the fact that they couldn't transfer, they could do hand scrapes, and they had 25 days in that, but they had 14 days in dredges, so that means they could never go do dredges. So it ended up that basically we were back to the drawing board and threw that out and started again thinking about it this spring. So the obvious thing for us to consider was the control date that we put into place on July 1st of 2014, which was pretty clear that if you got in the fishery after that date, that you would not be considered. Looking at those numbers, we had 1,124 people that had ever had a user fee, and 382 of them came in after the control date, which means if we took those out, it would leave us with 742 individuals in the fishery in January of 2017. And we worked through that with the committee, and we still had this in front of them where, these are the people that came in after the user fee, after the control date, and they accounted for 24% of the harvest, and this little group up here alone accounted for 23% of the total harvest, and there was just this big reluctance amongst the committee members to remove anybody that they knew that was working hard. The other half of the fishery, three quarters of the fishery is this group where they had it before the control date. So then they wanted us to look a little bit about, again, on the bushels harvested amongst those groups to break it down amongst years. And this one shows using all the gears because One thing we changing the focus of going to the control date meant that we were looking at user fees. So it meant that one of the things that had bothered them the year before was the fact that we were taking either a hand scrape away from them or a dredge away from them, and or both, but they couldn't transfer amongst things, or a hand tonger could then not become a dredger or a hand scrape. So by going to the user fee, it was saying that if you got your user fee, you can move within the fisheries, all the water fisheries, at the same time. And so using a control date was actually good for that part of it. And one of the things that we kind of picked up on by looking at these 3 years of the user fee is that if you look at these, the high rollers, the biggest guys are working the catching the most bushels. What we're seeing is that that group is going down, and that's what you would expect. You can't, the guys who are doing really good, there's not enough out there for them to do really good, so the fishery is kind of working itself back to the middle of the number of catch bushels caught, and which is an indication of there's not enough to go around for the amount of people you have. And it worked for the dredging also. The same picture was showing up. These guys, there was very few people that were down here able to make it into the high categories of dredging now, as the, especially in Tangier with everything going down. So they asked us to, you know, if we use a control date, come up with just an example of how it might work. And so this is what we came back to the committee with, and that's saying those showing just a little bit of four, is that we had 1,124 individuals that had user fees since 2013. 382 came out, had purchased them after July 1st, 2014. So there were 742. And if we went to this, to get into the fishery, you'd have to either have immediate family transfer, or we suggested to them that you could transfer if you had more than 40 days of harvest, which would kind of cut out the ones that didn't have much harvest from being able to transfer. A zero or a 10 bushel person couldn't transfer to a person that's go out and catch 500. But this did not go over with the committee. I mean, it was pretty obvious in the meetings. It was pretty dead. And so we kind of regrouped and came up with another potential path. And that was to step back. And if you recall, last February, the commission put a freeze on user fees. At that time, we asked for that freeze right then so that we could, work through this, and we wouldn't have people coming in and putting a user fee in their pocket while we were having these discussions on how we would move forward. And so thought about, how could we use that to come up with an ever-control system? And so what we came up with is that, keep the 1124, and an individual has got to purchase their oyster user resource user fee moving forward in order to maintain eligibility. And we have further added a little bit of cushion on that and said that we're recommending that you actually got till April 30th of 2017, which is when their commercial card is due for 2017, to buy your user fee. If you don't buy it by then, you're out. And from then on, if you don't buy a user fee in any year, you'll be out until we reach 600. And 600 is still high, but it was picked, because that's kind of where we were at beginning of 2013 when things started going up. So it seemed like a reasonable place to start. If you want to get into this period while it's declining down to 600, you'll have two avenues to get in: immediate family transfer, or you can buy, again, a user fee from somebody that had 40 days of harvest the previous calendar year. And believe it or not, got it. That passed in SMAC tentative. So we have a path to move forward. The reason that we picked 40 days is because with 1,124, we had originally thought 50 days, but if we use 50 days, there would only be, this is the average per year that had 50 days, it would only be about one in four that would have enough days to sell their license. So felt like, you know, it would be reasonable to go down to 40 days, where it'd be about 400 a year that if they wanted to sell their license, they could. They had enough time vested in the fishery that they could transfer their license to somebody else. So that is where we are on EverControl now. And that's, and I guess before I talk about the rest, I'd see if there's any questions on that before we finish up on just seasons and things like that for the rest of the year.
Are there questions from the commission?
No, just clarification. That 40 days means all gear.
All gear. Yeah. All gear. Yep.
Tongue and dredging.
40 days. Yep. You can transfer your license. Yep.
So, as I understand this, there's really pretty much four components to this. No more licenses. Freeze it. In order to maintain eligibility, you got to show a financial commitment. You just can't get a license and sit on it and never use it. You got to show some sort of...
You're contributing to the restoration of the fishery.
Exactly, by paying the user fee. You don't pay the user fee, you're out of the fishery. You can transfer, if this is adopted, to direct family members, but if you're going to transfer a license to anybody else, you have to have been a full-time harvester at 40 days or more.
Yeah, 40 more days.
So, do you have a guess how long it would take to get down to around 600 licenses?
No. I mean, it's going to take us several years. I mean, reasonably. I mean, last year we had 991. If we come in at 991 again, then you get rid of 150. But it will go down. I mean, if you're sitting there with a paying a user fee and you're not using it, those people are going to go out. So it's not going to be a quick fix.
Nope, that's true, and that will carry some risk to the stocks here as this goes into place.
Be very careful with the stock in the meantime.
It's true. On the other hand, it's certainly a bit more palatable from my point of view than kicking out 250, 300 people, like, right away. So this strikes me, tell me, Dr. Weston, if I have it wrong, this is kind of license reduction through attrition.
What I call it.
Oh, is that what you call
voluntary
it?
Voluntary attrition.
Voluntary attrition. Voluntary is an important word.
Yeah, this fishery is getting older. And it's going to, just by that, it's going to, people are going to drop out of it.
So I'm clear here. So if someone loses a license, it's because of actions or decisions they've taken. To either not pay the user fee, to not use it to at least 40 days, if they were going to transfer it to a non-family member. I mean, that's my understanding of it.
I mean, there'll be decisions for them to make. I mean, if you're getting old and you had 40 more days in 2015 and you don't think you're going to make it in 2016, you may want to get rid of your license this year, not wait till 2017.
Right. Well, that's a good point. Are there questions from the commission?
Is there any verification on 40 days?
Yes, we have mandatory reporting is... Just a verification. And we would also require, I think, buyer verification also. You'd have to have both sides. Because that's the obvious way that they'll try to beat that.
Let me ask a question of the commission. So we all have taken a couple runs at this. And the last we heard, I think it was in February, was... a desire from the commission to focus on the control date. This does not. Does this pose a problem with anyone on the commission that this does not focus on the control date? I mean, you gave instructions to staff to focus on the control date, and the advisory committee kind of, you know, kicked that out of the ballpark. So this is plan B, I believe, from the staff.
C or D, isn't it?
Or C or D. Maybe even E.
Yeah.
So I'm not asking if everybody agrees this is the path forward. This is a request for a public hearing. But if somebody has heartburn on the path now, better, I think, to hear it if you want to go back
strictly to the control date, now might be a good good time to hear the commission's will. Mr. Taggart.
I know Delegate Blockson mentioned to me that he thought the control date was a good thing. And he obviously heard from a lot of people who have these licenses right now. And any reason why we didn't use, what can we tell Mr. Blockson?
It just was so distasteful to the SMAC, and Wayne can attest to that, that nobody wanted to be a part of voting to put somebody they knew that was working hard out of business.
Even though there are a bunch of folks who have just gotten in this oyster.
Yeah, but there were a lot of guys that got into it and were very serious about it and have become a, you know, very attached to their buyers and, you know, and who they sell to. So they're very important. So there's going to be a lot of people speaking up for them, and I think that the people that will go to their legislators, I think Bloxham would have heard, will hear a whole lot more from them when they get removed.
You know, one of my concerns in this was if we went by the control dates, there's a lot of young people that would have been eliminated. And it's tough on them anyway. And with this, I think we're going to achieve the same thing. It may take a little bit longer, but it gives the opportunity for the younger ones not to have to go looking for jobs.
I also understand that a significant number of the newcomers, being the last couple of years since the control date, have spent significant money on gear. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. Good or bad?
So,
but
Mr. Tech?
But they knew that control date was out there.
Absolutely.
I like the fact that we were signaling with the control date, hey, you know, you're taking your chances. And there's still the transfer. They can still buy, if they spent money on gear, they can still buy into the license, correct?
Correct.
And at this point, I think we're suggesting that we hold the control date. We just, instead of having will in there, we'll change it to may. Commission may consider, so we can fall back to that if down the road you all see if this is not working. We can always drop back to that. I mean, this is going to be another poor year, so some people may just drop out this year just because it hadn't been as good as it's been.
So this is a request for public hearing.
I mean, I got to finish, but I just want to make sure we have been through this part first.
I mean, it's a request for a public hearing. If the commission hearing all this says, heck no, now's a good time to hear about it. I'm not asking for approval or a signal of your vote, just to understand what it is, and if you have major qualms with the direction that this is going, well, let's hear it. Okay. You good?
Yeah.
Okay, please proceed, Dr. Wesson.
So this is where we are with this season. I mean, this is a very similar chart to last year. We just move our areas around. Just going through the Rappahannock, the first area to open will be this area. This is Rappahannock Bridge. This is Area 4, Drummond Ground. Second area to open will be Area 2. Looking at these areas, Area 4, obviously this is what we like to see, and last year we saw a very good spat set. These fat will be big enough to withstand the harvest this year coming, more so than the ones last year that got beat so bad up. But that's the nice thing about these three-year rotations, is that if you get a spat set that gets beat up, you get two more shots at it to get back in. And they're about, even though this looks little, they're about 10 oysters per meter in the market category, which is about where we were last year when we had a good harvest. That's about where we are in the Rappahannock usually. If we have around 10, we have a good harvest. And then Area 2, similar thing, got a real good spat set there last year. The spat should be big enough now that they can take the harvest. And again, it'll be about 10 market oysters per meter there. The one area that we're struggling with, and it's probably the most controversial and you'll hear the most in the public hearing, is Tangier Sound. Area 1 was open this past year. Area 2 is due to open this year. Since we started these rotations in 2007, the ones that we're doing 3 years seem to be giving us the best stability, and it's more in line with it takes about orchards about 3 years to reach market size. If disease impacts are going to be there, they're going to happen sometime after the third year usually. So we get them out of there in time, but we at least let them. It gives you three shots at a spat set before you pound them, basically. You pound only one, you got a three. We started Tangier Pokemon with a two-year rotation right from the get-go, and when we started these rotations, they were just guesses. And what we see is that the two-year is not working as well as the three-year. And we're pretty much seeing this area go down area-wide. And what we're suggesting is that we probably should go on and jump off this year while things are so bad and move into a three-year rotation in this area as opposed to a two-year rotation. This is what Area 2, as it stands right now, if we don't do anything, looks like. Where we were talking about 10 orchards per meter in the Rappahannock, we're working with about 3 in Tangier Sound per meter starting off, which is a very low amount, just right from the start. And this is what the standing stocks look like in all these areas. Since 2012, it's been about as quick of a decline as you could possibly imagine in the number of bushels of smalls and markets out there. So either we have to live with this and know we're not going to have anything to harvest, or we have to try to adjust our strategy to try to make things turn around. And this is the way it is now. What we're suggesting is that we keep Area 1 as it, this area. This becomes Area 1. The area that are open this year is Area 2, which we'll take a little bit that was in Area 1 and put it in Area 2, and then Area 3 will give it another year to recuperate. Because when you look at them, I mean, and right now this is 12, 13, 14, 15. If you just look at 2015, where we are this past fall, the light blue is Area 2 that we're going to open this year that's in Tangier Sound. The one at the left, the Area 2 that we'll be going to. We had a really good spat set. We got some smalls, and we got, you know, 4 marked orchards per meter. But when you go across into Area 3, we got no spat set. We almost have no smalls, and we have no marked orchards, less than 1. So it's the same situation in seeing those graphs in Mob Shack, is that this area just needs some time to recover. And, you know, the biologically correct thing to do would be to close the entire thing this year. I mean, that's what we should do. But to keep some fishery going and to make us move to the future, and we are planting shells. We planted shells in these. We kind of hit Tangier Popo heavier last year and this year than we hit other areas to try to get it back going. But it's going to take us a little while to do it. But we're recommending that we go to a three-year rotation there, and, you know, this Area 2, which is just Tangier Sound, will open this year, and the part of it that would have been in Area 2 in Pokemon Sound will be closed. And there's nothing out there to catch, and just pulling dredges around destroys stuff and in order to get a very small product. The recommendation that came out of the SMAC was that this is Yocomico River, is to add 1 new Hantong area in that river, which is okay. I mean, we've not put any seed there, so won't be a lot to catch there until we get around to putting seed there, but we can get that into our rotation as time goes on. And that's about where we ended up with the SMAC, is that they wanted to add that one area. They were okay with the seasons. Of course, I don't think they're going to be okay with the Tangier part. I mean, Dan and the Tangier guys are obviously upset with that. But is a bad situation out there.
Now, let me ask a question. Up in the Tangier area, is what we're doing, is it working?
Not now, no. What we're doing is not working. I mean, it's an area that never gets as much spat set as the Rappahannock. I mean, it's always, if you're working in the Rappahannock with 100 total oysters per meter between spat, small, and market in Tangier, you'll be working with 40 to 50. So it's always down on compared to others. It's just such a wide area. Brood stock is certainly limited, and no matter what the watermen say, we have no sanctuaries in Tangier Pocomoke. We tried doing sanctuaries back there in 2005 to 6 and 7. We built sanctuaries, but they were just impossible to police. It was no way we could do it. So we felt like going to the rotation would be a better way to work up there, and I think we're just going to have to stretch the rotation out for an extra year.
So, but you said 3 years at first, right? A three-year rotation?
Yeah, well, it's 2 years now, so right. We'd be switching this one to three, like the other ones seem to be working. But the other thing that happens in the other ones that we don't have is we have sanctuaries in all these other areas that we do not have in Tangier. So we're more broodstock limited for certain in Tangier than we are in other areas. So that area will always be a challenge.
Mr. Tankard.
One of the things they talk about up there is the methodology is not in their favor, the methodology of our sample. Can you speak to that a bit?
I've been here since 1993 doing that methodology, and the methodology is great when it says what they want to hear, and it's not great when it says that they don't want to hear. And the methodology is our methodology between Rogers' crew and us. I mean, it's quantitative. I don't show you the error bars. We have error bars on everything. I mean, statistically sound. I mean, and it always makes sense with the harvest that we see. So the methodology can't be too far off. I mean, yes, they say because 9 and 10, if you remember, we opened it. There is no shell in 9 and 10. There is no way that oysters can repopulate that area. And so we had recommended leaving that area closed because there was a little broodstock there, and that was the only pocket of broodstock. In most models, the general movement of spat is from up, down. And so we went there last year, and we caught 19,000 bushels of oysters. And they say it's because that we didn't know what we're talking about because our sapling was flawed. We saw those oysters there. It's just that it's down around 3 oysters per meter, which is probably where oysters will not fertilize. And the only thing there were those oysters. There's nothing coming behind them. So when you take them, they're gone. And we knew how bad the lower area was, so our recommendation was to leave that area for your broodstock and, you know, protect the areas that you get most of your harvest from. And so the methodology, I mean, we knew what they would catch. It's just that we thought there was a better use for them as spawners because the rest of Tangier was doing so poorly. And Maryland's side did not get a very good spat set either, so it's not just our Pocomoke, it's Maryland's Pocomoke side also, because I talked with their people, and that's probably a big issue because that was probably some of the broodstock that was providing spawn for our part of Pocomoke Sound that's now not getting sets. And they're kind of have a more out-of-control fishery than we do, actually. So they've been dredging in there. They went and started dredging in there about 4 years ago, and they're pretty much harvested down to nothing with a much longer season than we have. And I think we're just suffering from a lack of spawning animals up that area. That's and it's nothing wrong with the survey. The survey shows what's there, and these dredges and hand scrapes can make a day's living with a half of an oyster per meter density, which if there's no, way you'll get efficient one male spawning, one female spawning, releasing sperm and egg into the water at those densities. They just, the chances of two washers being next to each other. And, you know, a lot of our areas in that open water, you don't have riprap, and you don't have docks where you got pockets of washers on poles and things like that, that are probably a big part of our spawning population in the rivers, where people always see these washers on, in congregations on rocks, as they make reefs, and that's where you got all the males and females close to each other. So you can fudge a little bit more in the rivers than you can fudge up there, and I think we're paying the price for that of just a lack of brood stock.
Any other questions to the commission?
So the recommendations would be, you know, to start that effort control by voluntary attrition that we went through. We're going to maintain the Friday off. We're not going to change that. The SMAC was for that. Add Public Ground 106. Advertise for subdividing Tangier into three areas rather than two. And the one little dangling thing that's out there that we still do not know exactly how to handle is that we have a small group of people that would like to do seed oysters in the James River that will be cut out. And we've been trying to figure out if there's a way to make just a seed oyster, some way to get them back in the fishery that they did nothing but seed. That small group would not be in this effort control, and we have not come up with a solution for that. And we can actually work on this, and then if we come up with a solution, we could actually advertise that in August to add in September. But at this point, the user fee is pretty specific in saying that in order to use any gear for harvest, you got to have a user fee. And you know, we can do a license, but you can't have a license unless you have a user fee for public oysters. And seed is still public oysters. So it may take a code change in order to let that happen.
Well, that can't happen until March.
That's right.
Even in an emergency, that's an emergency piece of legislation. Anyhow, Mr. France.
Yeah, that new piece of ground we're considering in Yokomico, I was wondering if we could consider it for the month of December. And I also spoke to Mr. Headley that owns the adjacent ground around there. He said they had no problem with that being open for towing. And another
It is now for October, November, and December.
All right.
Why would you?
Some of them just wanted it open for, they said it wasn't many oysters there, they didn't think, but it would be a nice kick in the month of December after they had left the other three bars that are open. I don't think it's about, you know, like you said, maybe an acre anyway.
Yeah, so it's about an acre.
Uh-huh. And also, the two areas in the Rappahannock, I've had some watermen from the Rappahannock and some on the Shellfish Advisory Committee with me make a comment that they would like to have considered opening a drumming ground that opens in October, right? Closing it for November, open the other area for November, and then in December have them both become open again. Their thought is that maybe that would scatter the boats out with both of them open in December and then boats going to James River also. Maybe take some pressure off those places a little bit.
I mean, that's not more restrictive, so that's certainly something we can listen to in public comment. And that would really not be a problem if they wanted to do that.
Any other questions to Dr. Wesson? Well, your ask is to have a public hearing.
Yeah, in August.
In August, the August meeting. So, Mr. Tankard?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Tankard, second by Mr. Neal. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Public hearing will be held in August, and a path forward will be found.